Hello and welcome to the ThoughtWorks Beacon podcast. I'm Neil Ford, and I'm here by myself today. I'm a software architect and meme wrangler here at ThoughtWorks. And one of the projects that I'm working on right now in that capacity is a book on evolutionary architecture, which is a subject that I've been talking about for a while and been thinking about even longer. And so has my colleague, our CTO, Rebecca Parsons. She has also thought quite a lot about this subject. And my colleague in the UK, Pat Qua, as well. So the three of us have gotten together and we're merging all of our ideas about what this idea of evolutionary architecture means. And one of the things that we are in the process of developing is a definition of what we mean by evolutionary architecture. So we're still in the early days of this project, so this is very much a working definition. So it very well may change either minorly or significantly by the time we get finished with this work. But for now, this is what we're working at. And really, this idea of evolutionary architecture, we think, is important because the software development world lives in this state of dynamic equilibrium, where everything is fine until some new factor comes in and has a wide-reaching influence, and it upsets the equilibrium, and the system has to come to a new steady state. We see this all the time in physics. You see this in the phenomenon of like molecular diffusion. But the software development ecosystem works that way as well. So, for example, if you were an enterprise architect 2 years ago and you made a 5-year plan and you didn't know anything about Docker, then as soon as Docker hits the ecosystem, you have to throw away that 5-year plan because the ecosystem's not the same anymore. And so that's why we're really interested in investigating this idea of evolutionary architecture, because we don't think that phenomenon is going to get any less severe, in fact, probably more so as we go along. And so we're trying to figure out a way to build architectures that are more resilient to change and are much easier to change and thus evolve. And so here is our working definition of evolutionary architecture. And evolutionary architecture supports incremental guided change as a first principle along multiple dimensions. And let me explain what I mean by this definition. And let's first talk about the dimensions business. Software architecture is a complex thing, and you can't really take in the entire complexity of all the moving parts at one time. And so you always, every perspective on architecture is really just that. It's a perspective, an abstraction on the underlying reality of that architecture. And you can have different perspectives on architecture, different types of architecture. So, for example, when we normally talk about architecture, we're talking about the technical architecture. This is how the libraries fit together in the frameworks and how the transitive dependencies work and the things you have to worry about at compile time and deployment time. Those are all the technical aspects of the architecture. But there's also the data aspect of the architecture. This is how tables work, how they evolve over time, and how you use data facilities within your architecture. There's also security architecture, how you protect the parts of your architecture that need to be protected. And a few years ago, a new perspective started gaining prominence in the architecture world, and that's this idea of a domain perspective. And this really comes to us from Eric Evans and his book, Domain-Driven Design, which is ostensibly an object modeling technique of taking a large problem and decomposing it into smaller and smaller pieces that you identify as the entities in your domain. And this particular concept in domain-driven design, this idea of bounded context, where everything within the bounded context you understand has full access to the implementation details like class hierarchies and database schemas, but no one outside the bounded context is allowed to know those details. You can ask a bounded context questions and get answers, but you're not allowed to know implementation details. So really the microservice style of architecture is taking the bounded context and making it a physical reality. So when you think about the evolvability of architectures, think about the traditional layered architecture, which is the default in many projects. And let's say you have a project that has a presentation layer and a business layer and a persistence layer and a database layer. Part of the reason you have that architecture in place is so that you can evolve parts of the architecture without having damaging effects to the other parts. So for example, if you want to change the persistence library you're using, you can change the persistence layer, and if you've got a well-designed layered architecture, it won't have much ripple effect to the other layers adjacent to it. And so in many ways, the entire purpose of this architecture, or at least one of its purposes, is to allow easy evolution. But you really only have one dimension of evolution here, evolution along the technical architecture dimension. Now, notice I said we had four layers in this architecture. We have four opportunities for evolution, but really just along the same dimension of evolution. Another architectural pattern that's quite common is the microkernel style of architecture, which shows up in browsers and build tools and pretty much anything with a plug-in API. Again, that architecture has one dimension of evolvability because you can add plugins to it and evolve its nature, but only along one narrow dimension. These dimensions of architecture don't have to map directly to technical architecture because you can think of what's probably best described as a workflow architecture, which is REST plus the Hadios hypermedia as the engine of application state style of architecture. The whole idea in the most advanced level of that architecture is when you make a request to a resource, part of the return are the subsequent links that you follow to complete the rest of this business process. And so that allows you to evolve what workflow occurs by changing the links that get sent back as part of the resource without having to notify the client that part of your workflow has changed. So that's a dimension of evolvability, but again, just one dimension because you are only allowed to change aspects of the workflow. As I mentioned before, a few years ago, there was a domain shift in architecture, started thinking more about the domain aspect of architecture versus just the technical layering of architecture. And this presents a problem in the traditional layered architecture because where does, for example, the customer bounded context live in the layered architecture? And of course, the answer is it's smeared out across all the layers because each layer has parts of customer living in it. And that's really the unique characteristic of the microservice style of architecture because one of the guiding principles of that architecture is this idea of making that bounded context a physical reality. And basically what we've done there is encapsulated the technical architecture inside each one of these domain-centric services. What that does in terms of evolvability means that it gives us N dimensions of evolvability, where N is the number of microservices you have, because there's no coupling between the implementation of these microservices. You're free to evolve each one in any direction that you like and has absolutely no effect on the others. This is the reason why microservices is a great example of an evolutionary architecture, because it supports evolution along multiple dimensions. And that goes back to our definition. An evolutionary architecture supports incremental guided change as a first principle along multiple dimensions. Because if it's just a single dimension, pretty much every architecture supports evolution along at least a single dimension. What we're interested in are these families of architectures that support evolution along multiple dimensions. The second aspect of the definition that I want to touch on is the idea of continual change. And here we're talking about an architecture that fully embraces the engineering practices in the world like continuous delivery, because what we want is an architecture. So let's say that you've built, for example, a microservices architecture, and you have a really well-defined continuous deployment pipeline where you can put things live at a ready basis. A really common practice in that world is to use mechanisms like feature toggles so that you decouple deployment from feature release. What that means is, for example, in a continuous deployment world, the component will get deployed as soon as it finishes its verification through integration tests and other sorts of criteria in your deployment pipeline. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you've impacted your user by that feature yet, because you can deploy it with the feature toggled off, which allows you to verify the operational aspects of that service, that it logs and monitors itself correctly, and it plays nice within your architectural ecosystem. At some point later, you can turn on that feature, but in many cases, you still haven't impacted the user, because in these kinds of architectures, applications consist of routes between particular specific services. So let's say in this kind of architecture that you run Widget Co. and you sell widgets on your website with a catalog and e-commerce capabilities. And one of the facilities you have, one of the services you have at Widget Co. is a star rating service. So people can rate your widgets or rate your salespeople or your shipping acumen. And you have a star rating service that's running and several different parts of your architecture use it. And then one of your teams creates a better star rating service that allows people to do half star ratings, and they put it live in your ecosystem. You don't force any of the other teams to use that new capability, but they, on their own time, may migrate over to that new capability. And at some point, everybody will have moved from the old star rating service to the new enhanced star rating service. A quite common engineering practice in this world is to use monitoring to look at services that no one is routing to anymore and automatically disintegrate them out of the ecosystem. That's what we mean by continual change, the ability to make small changes to things and put them out into the ecosystem in an incremental way without impacting the other parts of your architecture. The third aspect of this definition that I want to talk about is the guided part. We are talking about evolutionary architecture here, and we're interested in the ability to evolve over time based on environmental characteristics, but we don't want to model real evolution too much because while you certainly could build an architecture that just randomly changes itself and sees if it's more robust in the environment that it lives in, I suspect that it would take a few million years to create a better architecture using that approach, but we don't have to allow random chance to guide how the architecture evolves. We can guide the evolution of the architecture. And this is one of the mechanisms that we talk about in the book, this idea of fitness functions to guide your architectural principles. So for example, you may have a test in place because you have a performance criteria that you don't want page load times to get longer than 1 second. And that will make sure that you don't violate that criteria as you start evolving in ways you might not have anticipated before. This may be a combination of tests or monitors, but what we're really trying to do here is to not let evolution happen randomly. We want to treat it like breeding dogs, because humans guided the evolution of dogs to create all these different dog breeds. We don't want a platypus to evolve out of our architecture. We'd rather create a really cute chihuahua or a very, very useful herding shepherd dog or something that we have determined that we like. So that's our working definition of evolutionary architecture. An evolutionary architecture supports incremental guided change as a first principle along multiple dimensions. We'll keep talking about this subject, and in fact, we're building a long list of the characteristics of this family of architectures, some principles on how you achieve these architectures, and really importantly, how you organize teams to make these kinds of architectures achievable. So stay tuned. You'll hear much more about this from myself, Rebecca Parsons, and Pat Kwa as time goes on. Thanks for listening to the ThoughtWorks Beacon podcast. Follow us on Twitter at ThoughtWorks. And for more information on ThoughtWorks and our podcast, visit ThoughtWorks.com and please rate us on iTunes.